closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
It's 10:22 on a Wednesday, the day before this podcast is due. You showed up.
I showed up.
I'm proud of you.
Ah, me too.
We did it. Hey, everybody, it's Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's and Simon Cornell.
I'm Simon. Hey.
We're here together in my backyard.
We actually made it. It's been, what have we even been doing? It's been, I've lost track of everything. I'm having a minor existential crisis. Not in a bad way. It's okay. I'm all right.
You always work like crazy, but I'm working certainly way more than I ever have in my life. And it's great. It's wonderful. But also I need my couch time sometimes.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
But you know what you learn is, you only need a few hours in the day to get the normal tasks done that you would have the whole day to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, it's that old saying, and it's completely true, is if you want something done quickly and effectively, give it to a really busy person.
Yeah.
Because you get on that, you get that momentum roll. You get focused. You start to prioritize time way more effectively when you need to.
Yeah. And I'm learning that. And I would say the hardest part is just going to the gym, because I give people credit that can get up. My wife is very good about that, getting up as I'm opening it to cut.
I love how that sound totally made it into the microphones. I think the background hits the fire pit, which
we're going to have
great.
A lot. We're going to have the fire pit. We'll have my neighbors. We'll have airplane. Well, it's nighttime. We're right by Burbank Airport.
Gotcha.
Less likely for that. But yeah. We're busy. Busy is good, and just readjusting to it. I've never worked 50 hours a week in my life.
Yeah.
You know, other than, you know, our Macau travels, and even that was, you know, I think if you added it up, was maybe 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
Still, but...
Let me tell you some stories about the business consulting industry. memories.
But for you, it's very, I mean, this is, you're no stranger to
Well,
this.
It's different, though, because when you're working a job where you rock up at 9 till 5, or more likely 8 till 7, or whatever it ends up being in some corporate maelstrom... At least there's the regularity and the predictability, and it was not good. I much prefer this insane lifestyle when we're actually making money, which thankfully we are right now. Hurrah. That's amazing. I mean, let's take a moment to celebrate that. I mean, God, because I quit my full-time job and then proceeded to make no money for 7 years, and it was horrible.
Sure. Yeah.
So being too busy is amazing. It's joyous. It's glorious. If it could just slow down a little, that'd be great too.
Well, it's so funny. There's an episode on Seinfeld where he's like, I always break even. And he literally throws a $20 bill out the window. And an hour or so later, somebody walks up with it. I may have mentioned this before. We tend to repeat ourselves, but...
I don't remember you mentioning this. I remember the episode, but I don't remember your commentary.
That is my life in many ways, because I recently walked away from a gig that I've been doing for about 3-ish years at a certain location. And I did kind of my last set of shows... this past Saturday, and I just, you know when you feel done, you just feel like...
that's it. It's time to
go. I'm getting nothing more from this. I'm not growing anymore, and it's a lot of work for the amount of money I'm getting paid, and I guess that sounds like an ego thing, but it really wasn't.
That's
it was just...
Fair. You got to have that... Again, it's that thing, I can't do this without gestures, but if you're, you know, X units of good, and you think you're X plus one units of good, that's an ego, and you should cut that shit back. But if you think you're X minus one units of good, you should have some more confidence in yourself, and always being pursuing that you're X units of good, and you believe you're X units of good, and then that's a good place to be.
Hey, so the reason I bring up...
Come on, do it without the giggle. Do it so we can actually edit
that. I'm just going to say that there's an edit there, and my test cam said half battery, and then it just said, nope, we're done. We got batteries, we're good. And but the reason I bring up the Seinfeld thing is because literally 2 hours after I gave away my remaining show dates, I had 2 more months of dates with this particular location. I give them away because I'm like, I'm done. It's time to move on, time to grow. I get 2 weekends of gigs, and then I get one other local gig. So I made all the money I gave away back plus more. And it's funny how... Like, I guarantee you, if I didn't give away the gig...
That wouldn't have happened.
Wouldn't have happened. Somehow. That's just the way the universe
you
works.
You like Jerry or even Steven.
Yes. So I'm not complaining, but it's... You just sometimes have to have the guts to walk away from something. I'm terrible at quitting things, so I'm trying to get better at
That's
knowing
good.
When
yeah, well,
things
it's an important,
need to be done.
It's like many people in this world, I've been on a lifelong journey to learn how to say no to things.
Mm-hmm.
It's in all, in professionally, socially, personally, all of the above. It's a really important skill. What to say yes to, what to say no to, the wisdom to tell the difference.
I mean, you just touched on that. You had so many years of not making money at this. So where you, and it's same for me, it's like it's instilled in you to say yes to everything.
Yeah, just take everything you can get. Oh my God, you don't know where the next thing's coming from. Even things that aren't worth doing, do them so that you're doing something.
Totally.
I still remember that when I quit my job, at least I was very naive in a lot of ways, but I was wise enough to realize the importance of staying busy, doing something just to keep that busy person momentum. Mm-hmm. But again, it can be a trap. So I booked myself into Edinburgh Fringe and Melbourne Comedy Festival and all these other events and things throughout the year that were not necessarily going to be profitable, but I didn't know how to do anything profitable. I didn't know how to get actual money gigs or anything else at the time. So at least I figured, let's be doing something that keeps me growing and challenged and all those things.
I think that's probably why I had the guts to walk away at this point, because I'm, you know, I'm busier than I have been with a couple different projects going on. And it does make it easier to quit when you're like, well, I still have money coming in. And if there was no money coming in, which, you know, there are months where it's slower, that, I certainly wouldn't have the guts to do that. But we can quietly touch on a project you're working on, but you always have these crazy travel stories. I had a pretty intense one. Doing the Alaska cruises is the easiest of the cruises, especially if you live on the West Coast.
Yeah.
2-hour flight, connect in Seattle, another 2 hours, you get out.
Alaska's lovely.
Yeah. Alaska's
lovely. Your phone still works. You have internet connection.
Everybody speaks English and they're very friendly. I fly into Juneau and I'm supposed to have an overnight and get on the ship in the morning. And luckily I made friends with one of the other guest entertainers who knew people on the ship.
Mm.
And at about 11 o'clock, she texts me and goes, I just found out from one of the dancers that the ship's not coming into Juneau tomorrow. And I go, oh, interesting. So we're kind of on high alert. And then we send emails in the morning trying to land, and then to the port agent trying to figure out what's going on. Nobody's giving us any info. And then we find out that it's true. The ship's not coming in, so we're going to fly out the next morning. So extra night in Juneau. Great. Easy. Cool. It's a great downtown. Yeah. There's a couple good bars I like. And, you know, free extra vacation day because you would normally just be getting on the ship. Cut to next day. We wake up. We had to take these little puddle jumper planes to Skagway. And I had a 10 o'clock flight. She had an 8 a.m. flight. And she got there at 6:30 in the morning, and she texts and goes, it's not looking good. And fog everywhere across Alaska. So no airplanes were flying in and out of Juneau or anywhere. So we're trying to figure out, all right, what do we do now? So the port agent finally emails us, kind of reluctantly, and we find out we're taking a bus to a little local essentially a whale watching ferry run by this father and daughter. And it's a 2.5-hour journey up to Haines, Alaska. And then the port agent paid off this ferry boatman who's been doing this for 29 something years to take us another 30 minutes to Skagway.
Oh, wow.
And it ends up being just this wonderful, relaxing.
That's amazing.
Halfway through, they're like, okay, you guys want some Alaskan clam chowder? Or Alaskan seafood chowder?
Yeah.
And it was the best seafood chowder I've ever had. And it was one of these things that I think if I had just started doing ships, I would be freaking out. But because I had made friends with the other guest entertainers, we're all, and you know me, I kind of freak out at things. Mm. And the comedian looks at me and goes, man, you're taking this really well, as we're on this boat in the middle of nowhere, Alaska. And and I say to him, you know, this is what we get paid for.
Yeah.
this is easy.
And it's also when you get to the point where my reply in those kinds of things is often, this isn't even in the top 20 weirdest, most screwed up situations I've been in while traveling to gigs at this point. And that's the value of experience. I've seen worse shit than this.
And then the icing on the cake is I get on the boat. It's Friday. I was supposed to be on the boat Thursday. Mm. I get on the boat. It's Friday. And I get my little letter that tells you when you have shows. And usually you have two different 45-minute shows that you repeat twice on a given night. And I get, and it's one show repeated twice on the following Wednesday. So we rushed like crazy to get all the way to the ship, when in realistic terms, I could have just flown into Victoria, Canada on
2 days later.
No, literally 4 days later.
Wow.
And yeah, so.
It has always. I've always wondered how, and I'm sure there is an answer that we just that is just invisible to us. How that works with ships? How there's these very specific dates you have to be on the ship, and then often don't actually need to be. And I'm sure somewhere in some central scheduling thing, there is actually a reason for that, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense, because the comedian, right when we got on that night, had to do two shows.
Yeah.
And like, luckily, they kind of gave us a heads up. We were in contact with the ship, but I was kind of, I was like so thankful I didn't have to do a show that night, but at the same time, I was like, well, now I got to sit here for 5 days, and then I don't know if I'm going to be any good by Wednesday, because I will have not done a show in a week, essentially.
It feels like something that a team, one day a team of management consultants is going to figure out a fix for that and save the cruise industry collectively $1 billion a year in entertainment pro rata fees by fixing it.
In their mind, it makes more sense for you just to be there, depending on the cruise line. But they don't realize the amount of money they spent on those last minute flights, that ferry, the flight, that even the original flight was booked 2 weeks prior, which is not a cheap time to book a flight. Mm. There is just a real disconnect, because even though you're not crew, you're kind of still treated as crew. And I mean,
weird mid ground.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things of, I'm glad my years of experience doing this kicked in, of just like, all right, I'll just wait till I get the next email that tells me what's going to be canceled and what's, you know, what goes on next. But that was fun.
Yeah, God, it's funny, isn't it? Like right now, it's annoying. This has been a theme recently, that I'm working on so many secret projects. I mean, there's two things that are secret, but the vague booking, the term for making vague posts on Facebook in an annoying, self-indulgent, attention-seeking way. I hate it. It annoys me. It's usually people being wankers who just want the attention, and when people do it in personal life too. Oh yeah, someone's going, you know, all these things that are secret, and here I am doing it, but it's. I think, what is it? Vague casting, making vague statements on podcasts.
For me, it's I get so frustrated when I see somebody posting about, you know, quote unquote, working at the castle when it was either just like getting people in or it was just something.
Yeah, and you know it's actually complete bullshit.
I'm like, that's just, dude, just wait until, do the work, get booked.
Yeah, do an actual thing and then talk about the real thing.
And it's okay.
Yeah. But the thing that's happening, it's a thing I'm, again, contractually not allowed to say where it is, but it's happening very soon. It's happening in a few days. By the time you hear this podcast, it's about to be happening.
Location.
In a very, very dry, hot location. But I'm preparing to do some huge shows with my friend Shutagawa, who the magician listeners will know of. And it's a show that we've done before. We've talked about it in the past. But now we're doing it at, again, an undisclosed event where it's expanded to become, well, it's a big thing. There's a lot more moving parts now than any show I've ever done. And one of the big things I've been doing over the past kind of month is actually writing a script for it. And it's now become about a 6,000 word document. Like, it's a script for this whole full-length show, because it's now complex enough we need those cue lines for the actual technical production, for everything else. And it was by far the most, it's not the most elaborate thing I've been involved in or performed in, but it's by far the most elaborate thing I've kind of co-written, and now kind of I'm a de facto co-producer of it. Mm-hmm. I've become so involved in getting everything organized. And yeah, it's a hell of an experience. And right now it's just a massive pain in my ass. I just want it to be done with. I'm very glad I'm doing it. I will also be, again, so like Macau, very glad to have done it. Very glad when it's over. But it will be, I think it's about 80% likely to go really well. It's kind of my diagnosis at the moment. There are still many question marks waiting to be filled in, but overall feeling reasonably optimistic about it.
No, I saw a show in the location that you're performing at, and it's not, you know, not an easy space.
See, it's annoying how vague we have to be.
Yeah, I can't say anything else, or else it'll give it.
But
away
that's also
completely.
That's a thing that I've, you know, speaking of what you mentioned about, you know, freaking out about things and getting anxious about uncertainties, and that was. I've become so much more mellow about things like that over the course of my life. And a lot of it has been from facing incredibly screwed up situations and whether they, and yes, sometimes making it through and having them work out, and sometimes not. Sometimes things just fall in a shit heap and it's terrible and the show's bad and you're embarrassed and life is not good. But even that is a useful experience, because it's what tempers you. It makes you stronger and more flexible, because you know, oh yeah, that time, that thing completely died on stage. And you know what? Life went on. I lived to tell the tale. There were other things. It's not career ending. And that's why I'm less stressed about this now. If this had been 5 years ago, I'd be freaking out right now.
Yeah.
But you know what? You got to try bold things. Otherwise, that's how you grow. You try bold ideas. You do as much work as you can, but you still take risks and go for it.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're just kind of jumping off the deep end. You're performing with a very capable person. So... Which is great. Yeah.
And a capable team. There's a lot of people. Again, there's more people involved in this than any other project I've been directly in charge of.
We need to announce our public shows. I believe you're doing this. John told me you're doing this with me because he asked who you want to work with.
Yeah, we're doing that, aren't we? We can't talk about
that. Try booking Simon. He's like, well, if he returns my text message, we'll try booking him. And then you did.
When are we doing that?
So we're performing at Magicopolis. I got it all right here. This is what I was doing at the office today.
Shit, that's like next weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, next weekend, Magicopolis, August 9th through 11th, which is in Santa Monica. It's a magic theater that's been around, but they're changing the format. And then I'm doing it this weekend with you, and then I'm doing it again with I don't know who else in a couple weekends.
It might be me as well.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. So that's in Santa Monica. I assume the website is magicopolis.com.
Probably. If you Google Magicopolis Santa Monica, you'll find it.
Yeah, so we're doing that together. I'm doing the Magic Castle with my buddy Scott Pepper August 14th through 18th. If you're a member or know somebody that can get you in, check it out. August 25th, I'll be opening for a comedian friend of mine at Flappers in Burbank. And then we are doing our run of shows in Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, yeah, which I just found out today.
Which has a great name.
So
the dates are September 26th through the 28th.
And the show, I've just discovered, has been titled Simon Coronel's Magic Smackdown, which was not our plan.
Which is great.
The people organizing it, the people at Bloomington Playwrights Project, who are a great bunch. It's a great room, great people, love everything about them. I know them because I did a 2 week run of shows there last year, whenever, and it was the all time best selling show they'd ever had at the theater, which was amazing. It was really gratifying. Got a great response, and so I think they've in the small town of Bloomington. Apparently, they think my name will get ticket bookings because people go, oh, that guy did that thing that was great. They might not be wrong. It's weird to think about that.
When you told me that, I there was no ounce of jealousy. There was just like right. Yeah, great.
Yeah, yeah. If that sells tickets, great.
I mean, it worked for you guys and also at Melbourne Magic Fest when you did your little Foolish show.
Yeah, so, exactly.
I had more things written down.
That's going to be. I'm really looking forward to that. I think I'm so. That's going to be so much. It's going to be a good place to try out a thing that could have real career traction, and it's going to be fun. I'm just actually just looking that gig is going to be pure joy. With annoying flights early in the morning and stuff like that, but basically fundamentally a fun, happy gig.
When I got those flights, I was like, oh, I wish they would have asked me.
Yeah, right, I know.
We are definitely missing one of those flights. We have like a 30-minute window in Chicago to get to Indianapolis. Yeah.
And to be fair, that's on me. I should have paid more. I should have really managed that up front.
Well, they were sending it to you when you were in Australia. So.
Yeah, and up to my ass in 1,000 Magic
Festival
things.
Which I'm dealing with our lovely cruise agent, where the travel department is based in the UK, but a lot of the ships I work with are on the West Coast.
Yeah, so time zones.
So there's always a day delay. And they booked my wife on a ship with us. And I was like, no, she's not coming. And if they didn't, luckily it all worked out fine. But if they didn't cancel in time, that comes out of my paycheck with ships. Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So there, booking travel, you got to stay on top of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of the guest entertainers and we were talking about like just the correct setting for a show of how different your show is in a lounge on a ship versus like the theater
show.
Oh,
yeah, massively.
And she said, no one wants to eat filet mignon on a garbage can tray.
Yeah.
Which was a little pretentious, but
still.
I don't think I'm filet mignon, but I get what she's trying to say.
You know what? It's funny. I'm going to beat this metaphor to death a little bit because I do kind of like it. In that I think, you don't want anything off a garbage can tray, let's be honest. But I think there is something about filet mignon, so a really nice piece of steak. Yes, you want it in a nice... Excuse me, burping from the beer that we are drinking next to the fire pit. This is the best environment
for
a podcast.
Episode,
I like it. Yeah,
what's up,
bro? Sink some tinnies. That's an Australian thing. Sorry.
I don't know what you just said.
To sink a tinny means to drink a can of drink.
I was thinking
usually
of something else.
Beer. Yeah, well. Because a really nice steak, yes, you want it in a nice environment. But also, honestly, some of the best steaks I've eaten in my life have been sort of char-grilled in tinfoil around a campfire. eaten off a piece of wood. Just like there is something about the other direction, but that's the thing is, that's nice in a different way.
It's the presentation.
Yeah, what you don't want is a filet mignon off some kind of shitty plastic plate in a McDonald's. Like then that sucks. So there's a lot of different, and I'm thinking about, again, to a show, right? A really nice theater, or kind of just like a gutted out warehouse with cool lighting, right? That's also a really cool experience. Okay, at the opposite end of the spectrum. I think that's, there's a lot of nuance to what a good environment for a show can be.
It's the amount of, if somebody walks in and goes, okay, they put some effort into this, as opposed to, and I was trying to explain that to a gig, I'm doing a really strange gig next Tuesday where it's like this summer camp, but he's renting out a yacht.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to explain that, okay, that's great and all, but we need to make it like a stage set. Yeah. You're having me do a stage show, so we need to set that, that set up it like a theater so people understand what they're coming to see. And so much of my experience in doing this for so many years is realizing you just kind of have to baby, especially if it's like a private event or corporate.
Yeah,
you
have to just baby not even the beginnings of a clue. One of my big tips for that is if you're ever considering producing an event, putting it on in an unusual space, something that I did years ago, and it's every now and then really steered me well. I was doing Beyond Brookledge, the thing that Erica Larson runs at this amazing, bizarre, immersive hotel in Riverside. So not the normal Brookledge Follies they do, but the once-a-year special ticketed event that's like $1,500 a ticket for the three-day experience, including meals and accommodation. So it's a whole thing.
Wow.
And it's like, imagine a variety show that runs for 3 days, nonstop, like 24/7. And it's set in this hotel, in the conference rooms and the hotel rooms and theater rooms and everything. And all kinds of bizarre stuff happens at all times. And it's about 75% planned, 25% improvised, which makes a really cool mix because they get just good switched on performers and see what they come up with to make the event amazing. And at one point, we decide to do an impromptu show in one of the hotel rooms at about 1 a.m. and put this together, grab a bunch of performers, work out a set list. But it's a hotel room, so the lighting is intrinsically not optimized for theater. But I thankfully own a pair of the brand and model is Dido DLH4 light heads. They're usually used in video production and screen production as light sources for videography. But they're basically tiny little micro lensable spotlights, so they can widen to a broad flood beam or narrow to a very tight pin spot. And they are so useful. They come with dimmer packs as well, so they're focusable and dimmable. And thanks to those two and a couple of clamps, I basically set up two-point stage lighting in the hotel room. And the moment when it was time to start the show, and again, normally you fade to blackout before a show begins, gets everyone going, ooh, okay, it's about to start. When we killed the room lights, went to blackout, and then snapped on the spotlights at one end of the room, there was this audible, whoa, shit, like gasp of excitement and surprise. And then we actually had a stage lights in just a hotel room. Just two lights is enough. Obviously, more is better, but even that total change in the environment and the ambience. Because, again, like you said, someone had made some effort.
Yeah. Just people walking in going, okay, I know I need to like change the part of my brain that, you know, accept that.
Yeah, show begins now. Creates so much more atmosphere. And again, those lights are not cheap. They're like $1,000 a unit, like with the dimmer and the power converter and the light and the lens and everything. But it's what the light that I originally brought when doing the close-up room at the Magic Castle, and I wanted kind of a spotlight effect in the darkness, which, again, I had to rig my own lighting. I spent like 4 hours there on a Monday. That's why I bought it, because I wanted to do something cool at the Magic Castle.
I think I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And I then later on bought a second one to use for other things, and they make great makeshift portable stage lights for unusual spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And in actual theater, they'd look terrible because you used it better, but in a place that's not, they make all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
So I travel with them now when going to unusual event spaces like that. They've often come in handy.
Today I spent, all morning and yesterday morning I can't say what the trick is, but I've been purchasing giant, rectangular blocks of cheese. Save and Low? I forget what the name is.
Save and Low. This is for your current day job?
Yes.
Is that secret? Can you talk about where it is or not? People will find out eventually easily put the pieces together.
It's in a production office in Glendale.
Yeah.
But they're shooting all over LA. It's funny how, and this morning I was just boiling cheese and making something out of cheese for a trick. And it's just, it's funny how, like, this is all normal for everybody working. I was like, yeah, it smells like cheese.
Cool. That's what we're doing.
I'm grossed out by cheddar now. I don't want to eat it, but...
You've seen too much. You can't go back.
It's weird how quickly that has become normal. Like, everybody's working on something weird like that, and... This gig is very interesting because, you know, I'm working 9 to 7 every day, and these guys are there till midnight, and then they'll be back there at 7 or 8 in the morning, like the guys on the magic team, just making sure stuff gets done for the next shoot day. And it's just, it's, I have to stop thinking about how absurd it is, because the second I start thinking how absurd all of this is, I get angry and slightly depressed. And then when I realize how cool this is at the same time,
it's amazing
what an opportunity it is to be around these weird tricks and things people are building, and people just thinking about the stuff. You just have to look at it from a very simplistic point of view, because it's a lot of time in with these people in a space, like creating tricks and helping come up with ideas. And it's so much fun and so exhausting. And half the time I'm like, I just want to go home, I want to be done. And the other half I'm like, this is great, this is super fun. And finding that balance between the two and not going crazy between the hours of 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. it's been a interesting muscle to work stretch.
It's one of the things that I love the most about this career path is just how bizarre and fascinating and unique and weird the problems that you get to solve are. That, I mean, I spent, this is not sort of enough of a spoiler to worry about it, I spent the last week basically in Chicago in a basement with a Glowforge, the portable at-home, like consumer-level laser cutter. can confirm, Glowforges are the shit. They're really good. There was a lot of, it was a long story. There was a big, long Kickstarter. They were delayed by about a year. Everyone was wondering if it was just vaporware and not going to turn out. Nope, they're great. They're not perfect. They've got some issues, but they basically work. It is a laser cutter you can have in your home. They are about $5,000, but for a laser cutter, that's unbelievably cheap. You're normally looking at $10,000 minimum for a halfway decent industrial grade one. And sitting in a basement with a Glowforge cutting out progressively smaller jigsaw puzzle pieces out of acrylic and like optimize, working on the exact shapes of these pieces, again, for something magic related and secret and yada yada. Mm-hmm. But that was pretty much the week I spent making jigsaw puzzle pieces on a Glowforge in a basement in Chicago.
Weird.
Yeah. And it was great. I love it. It's so much more interesting than any other job I've had ever. Again, now that it's actually going okay financially, now it's glorious rather than worrying and stressful. I'm still worrying and stressful occasionally, but it's the needle for me has tipped more into exciting and cool, which is a really great place to be.
Yeah, I'm learning to be able to slip into that creative mind and create, because it's something that I don't have all the time. There, like when I'm trying to write new stuff, it has to be. I heard somebody. I think it was Kumail Nanjiani, comedian, he was saying he's kind of obsessive about this, in that when he's writing or if he gets an idea, he has to write it down right then and there, or if it's like a script or a joke or whatever. Because if not, I mean, I think it's common for something to just be gone, but also just that spirit of creativity and that spirit of wanting to work and get something done kind of only happens, at least this is something I relate to, happens in certain moments. So I've been learning to pay attention to those things when my brain, like something gets set off. And especially being on the ship all last week, just sitting down and treating it like office hours, I scripted out my show, which is something I've never done before, and tried to memorize new bits of the show and then started writing jokes. And just, I knew if I wouldn't have written them down in that exact moment, they would not be in my notepad, and I would not have reference to them because I don't remember things. So I think it's learning to pay attention to when your brain is kind of speaking to you creatively.
Oh yeah, massive. And I go through weird seasons with it because it's actually interesting the different ways people note take. That's a really important thing to think about, because for me I have a Markdown text editor app on my iPhone that synchronizes to Dropbox. So I'm very much a digital note taker. I have bad handwriting. I don't like physical note taking.
I've transitioned over to it too. I love real notebooks, but I never have one with me when I need it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm fully digital, and I keep my notes in a series of text files in Markdown as a markup language, which is a whole thing we can talk about later.
Of course
so,
you do.
It's a whole thing. But yeah, it's basically it's like kind of like rich text format. It's a very basic text formatting system that's really good and really effective. And then they are synchronized to Dropbox, which means all my notes are backed up in multiple locations in the cloud, on my laptop, on my phone. They're synchronized and they're searchable.
I just use Apple those two notes. Things.
Hey, do that too. But yeah, being able to have them, knowing they're safe, knowing you can't lose your notebook, that's killer. That's that's the dream. And then they're searchable. So I can go, man, I know 2 years ago I had some kind of idea about a balloon doggy routine or something. That was the thing I wrote down. I had this idea for a balloon animal kind of trick. And I can just type balloon and boom, I'll find it easily. That's so much better than physical notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just quick searchability and just having it there and being even just like being able to jot it down if you're going to the bathroom or if
yeah, completely.
You're walking out the door somewhere. God,
yeah. And it's interesting. And I always date the notes. I write like the date, the title for what the basic idea is, then the description. And if I go back through it, there were these fascinating ebbs and flows. There will be months with no entries and then 20 entries across 2 months.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting knowing when I'm in a really creative mood and when I'm not and when that happens over time. Some years were really dry. Others were really damp, I guess is the opposite
of
dry.
It's really smart to date it. Yeah, I do that. I mean, I switched over to like a digital journal, which I never used to do. I used to always write that down. But having the date and then being able to look back and go, oh, okay, I am repeating these thoughts or I am experiencing this over and over or this is something new. Just having that quick reference right there.
Yeah, completely. It's such a big deal writing those notes down and having them on your phone so you can do it right then, right there, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fascinating going back through them. I don't go back through them enough, actually. I keep remembering I really should look through my notes and go, oh, yeah, some of these ideas were great. I completely forgot about them.
Yeah, it's weird how, like, I'll write stuff down, but then if it's not something that's jumping out to me, again and again, I'll just kind of forget about it. But it's good to have those points of reference.
Yeah, this actually feels like a thing. I mean, we've been known ever since like the episode with Dom that was really good. We should get, and the episode with Rocco back in Macau, we should get more people on for a Three Magicians, One Mic session. And this feels like the kind of question it would be good to ask people. How do you take notes of ideas and how do you do so? Right? It gets into really pragmatic, actionable, usable actual life tips for people.
I remember hearing Penn talk about this. He used to just think that Bob Dylan was a genius and would just show up in the studio and go, music would pour out of him.
Yeah.
And then he found out he just carried a notebook around.
Yeah.
And then he would reference that when writing songs.
Yeah.
And it's such a simple thought, but once you realize that, all you're doing is just paying attention to the thoughts you have.
Yeah, completely.
It's almost made me think I can do just straight stand-up eventually if I work hard enough at it, because I am able to just pay more attention to my note-taking. Yeah. And it's still something I'm terrified, and I don't think I would ever be adequate to actually try out. But just the structure and the persistence of note-taking and journaling is, I think, super important for the creative process.
Yeah, completely. Well, it's also interesting, I find, going back through my notes and looking at what percentage of things actually end up becoming real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fractional. It's microscopic. It's maybe like 2% of ideas actually end up. Because about maybe, I don't know, 1 in 5 ideas, maybe 1 in 3 ideas I actually try out in some form. But often it involves building a prop or creating a thing or practicing a new technique or something. And then out of the ones you try, maybe 1 in 10 don't suck. And then out of those 1 in 10, out of the 1 in 3, so it's now down to 1 in 30, maybe 1 in 3 of those actually becomes usable material. And there are things that become usable material, maybe 1 in 5 of those is good enough to actually become a core part of the repertoire because it's as good as or better than everything else you can already do.
Sure.
So it's this tiny fraction, and that's cool, that's healthy, that's exactly how it should work. I think a lot of people who don't actually get out there and do it have this, again, like Penn with Bob Dylan, have this deluded idea that it's somehow natural or simple or easy for people who do it. And it's no. Like, the people who are doing it usually are just working harder.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, maybe slightly more creative and maybe slightly more talented, but that's not what's making it happen. It's just getting out. You become creative and talented by practicing doing those things.
Yeah, and I've seen that with the guys I'm working with who are just putting these crazy hours to, okay, we need this trick done by tomorrow. Mm. Or like, it's very common that the writers are changing something or something will change because of, based on a location. They're doing something with a nudist retreat
yeah.
in a weekend, and then they found out they can't do it there because it's some sort of nudist festival, so the whole location had to change. I don't think I'm giving away too much. I don't even know what the tricks are for that. I didn't even look at it.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, just that these guys have, you know, okay, this is what needs to be done. This, you step up to the plate because you've put in these hours of
yeah.
paying attention and yeah. taking notes. And
yeah, over the course of years and decades. Like, that's how you get good at anything, by doing a lot of it. And that includes being creative and inventing things. It was the George Carlin model of throw out your material every year. That's more extreme than I'm willing to be. I'm not advocating that. But that was what he did. He forced himself to come up with new stuff.
That?
Apparently.
Okay, because CK made that famous, and a lot of other comedians do
I'm
that.
I'm pretty sure that he...
I didn't know Carlin did that.
I learned about it from CK, and I'm 99% sure he was inspired by Carlin to do it.
Yeah, he had... I don't know if he did it every year, but he did have a bunch of specials.
Yeah,
so
CK did that. That's where I first heard of it. I think it was at Carlin's like funeral or wake or celebration after he died. They did some kind of memorial thing for Carlin, and CK told the story of how apparently that's where he got it from.
Mm-hmm.
The idea: throw out all your stuff because it forces you to get better at creating stuff. If
yeah.
you keep creating more stuff, what a thought! You get better at something by doing it a lot.
And that's something we kind of had this like heart to heart yesterday in the office, because a few of the builders aren't feeling like their stuff is getting on,
yeah.
getting shot or getting put in the mix. And, you know, there's a little bit of ego thing going on. But then we all kind of realized, and everybody said this, and even the people that were having those issues came to the conclusion that, you know, the goal is just to make a really good show.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if none of your stuff
yeah,
gets on TV.
Completely.
You're working as a team. And I think that even if you're a solo performer, that's important to note, because you can kind of think that everything has to be amazing, when really you just have to strike out a bunch and
yeah.
get to the right spot.
You have to strike out about 90% of the time, at least,
mm-hmm.
if not more.
Just being willing to... That's something Carl Marlette said that I really liked yesterday. He said, you should not... There are people that, you know, when someone steals their material or if somebody puts something out there, and they get really mad about it, those are the people that are afraid because they'll never be able to out-create themselves.
Mm.
And you should never be worried about that. You should always assume that you can create something better and continue to create.
Mm.
And I took a lot away yesterday. We spent like an hour or two talking about this, just stopped doing magic stuff and just all sat down and chatted.
Mm.
And it was very interesting and inspiring to hear that point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, there was some, what's his name, Paul Arden. One of the best books I've ever read, at least one of the books that had the biggest impact on me, is called It's Not How Good You Are, It's How Good You Want to Be by Paul Arden. It's one of the shortest books I've ever read. It's very short, very simple, very illustrated. He was an advertising guy. And it's just kind of a book about just shit he's learned from his life. And there are many nuggets of absolute gold in there. And one of them is basically that thing about, and I don't necessarily... It's like that thing earlier, don't necessarily take this to the extreme, like George Carlin, and throw away everything. But he said basically his advice was give everything away. Don't covet anything. Don't cling to anything.
Yeah.
Force yourself to keep creating newer and better stuff. Because if you can't, you're dead in the water anyway.
Yeah.
And you might as well give up then. So just don't worry about that. Go on. Keep going. And also, the more you give away, the more it forces you to keep creating more stuff so that you have things. And again, I think that's an extreme.
Yeah.
And I don't plan to nor advocate going... Excuse me, burping again. Necessarily going that far with it, but it's something I do think about a lot, about not clinging to the present and the past, instead looking forward to the future, because change is the only constant.
Yeah, I mean, you see that's the great thing about having the castle right here and being able to see multiple shows in a month or in a couple of months. You see who the people are that are clinging to their routines from 25, 30 years ago, and you see how, sure, that was great in the 80s or the 70s or the 90s, but...
It ain't now.
You're so afraid to try something new, and I get that. I get that fear, but it's been such an eye opener. That's probably the greatest thing about being able to go to the castle so often, is seeing who's willing to try stuff and who's willing to not. And and it's not a judgment thing. It's just a cautionary tale. Type thing.
Completely. Don't risk stagnation. Keep trying. Keep innovating. Keep risking. And that's that thing, it's the danger. And I caught myself with this a bit because back in Australia, I kept winning magic competitions. Yay me, yay whatever, blah blah blah. But that's a thing. That is a thing that kept happening. And I started to notice. This is years ago. I was starting to become wary of entering again because I didn't want to break my win streak.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, no, that is dangerous. That's bad. You got to be willing to lose and tank and crash and burn every time. You got to go out there because otherwise you'll be afraid to innovate, afraid to try, afraid to push forward and risk.
I mean, look at like the movies that win Best Academy Award. A lot of those actors, I mean, they work, but they don't work in that capacity. Like, remember that black and white movie, The Artist?
You've seen
none of those. That was just such a groundbreaking film at the time. Yeah. At least that's the way it was perceived. And you've seen none of those actors work in anything in, like, a public manner. Maybe they are working in some other non-public capacity or theater or something. And I try never to judge people if you don't see them, because it's so common someone will go to directing or someone will go to theater where they're not a public thing. But in terms of like commercial success, winning awards is kind of a dangerous thing.
Good for them if they manage to do something other than goddamn acting. I think it's the same about magic sometimes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, there are other career paths that are as good as, if not way better, to be in. Good for that person if they find something that's better to do.
Yeah. I've spoken to a few people that, and friends of ours that are like, you know, they have real jobs, really good paying jobs.
Yeah.
And they want to go into magic full time. Like, no.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
I mean,
if
you don't despise your job, it's way better as a, well, yes. Yeah. It's a tough call, isn't it? I was going to say it's way better as a hobby, but then you don't have that full immersion. You'll never learn the same things you learn by doing things like Macau, right? The amount of things we learned that I learned that, you know, particularly from that experience. Holy crap. I saw places emotionally, spiritually, existentially that I never would have seen in myself, in the universe, in the heart of darkness, the core of our being, that if I hadn't been there and done that.
I'm excited to talk to our friend Taylor when he gets back. He's doing the Branson gig I did. But he's doing, I think, 4 or 5 shows a day and then doing the amphitheater show, which I was only doing like 1 show a day. He's doing these crazy amount of shows and then going and doing this. And I think he's there for like 7 weeks total. And I was talking to him on the phone yesterday, and I'm starting to hear that change, what I call it, performance fatigue. When you just, you're like, oh, man, and you're not. And I was listening to a Broadway actor I really like on another podcast of him talking about doing 8 shows a week. And it almost physically killed him.
Yeah.
Just in terms of what he had to go through.
The voice of a man who's seen the void.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still remember frequently. I think about that whenever I need it, when you were talking about couch time earlier. And I still think about that week in Macau that we had off when they had to redo the floor and they shut the place down for a week. And we've got an unexpected week of vacation. And I thought all these had these grandiose plans about Vietnam's nearby, Thailand's nearby. And then I spent the entire week on the couch. And normally if you spend even a day on the couch, you feel like crap at the end of it. You feel like a blob. I didn't. I felt great every day, and which is just the fact that I felt great after sitting on the couch for like 5 days straight, stopping only to go downstairs to Jack's kitchen to get food. That was just a sign of how utterly shattered I was. I needed that recuperation.
Working these, you know, 50-hour weeks on this show has, I mean, something... Like, I want nothing more to do in life than to sit on the couch and, you know, watch television with my wife and dogs. That's something I've had to kind of overcome, because when it's exactly what you said. If you do that, if that's all you do all day, you go to bed and you feel kind of like shit. But if it's like a reward,
you've earned
then
it.
It's great.
And you need it because you need that recuperation time.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. It's such a goddamn privilege to be able to earn that reward doing something that's actually fascinating.
Yeah,
that's such a rare thing.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. I'm like, oh man, I'm working 10 hours today. This is tough.
Yeah,
then
we're
doing
unbelievable things.
Then I think, oh, this is done in a month, and I'm working on a hit television show. And I was talking about this with my dad. And, you know, I was like, this is a really tough week, and there was something I forget even what it was. There was something I didn't get some gig, and I was talking with him about it, and I'm like, but you know, I'm working on a hit TV show, and you know, it's long hours, but it's, you know, it's done next month, and it's finished, and I move on to the next thing. And then you realize, oh, there, people have to do that. Like, it's not done in a month for them. Like, they have to keep doing
that. Yeah, keep going.
and, you know, whatever that job is. So just looking, you know, trying not to be too frustrated with it.
Yeah, completely. And there's also, it also depends. There's different people who need the stability more than the excitement, and vice versa.
Yeah.
Needing that excitement of new project, different thing. Like project-based life versus, I don't know what the opposite is, like sort of the same kind of job, the same consistent job-based life. It's like, this is what I do every day, day in, day out, versus, yeah, all right, this is life for 3 weeks is this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've been doing this, what, a month or a little over a month now, so getting on board with the routine is good for me. It's good to have, I do really well with structure, so that's helping, but the whole time all I'm thinking about is, okay, when do I get a break, or when do I get time? Yeah. And it's just how I'm wired, and it's not that I'm not enjoying it. And I used to get kind of down on myself, but it goes back to what we were saying earlier of going, okay, so I have 4 hours to work to get this thing done. I'm going to work really hard, finish whatever the task. Like today was the cheese thing. I had to work. Yep. I had to get this done.
Boil that cheese.
I had to boil the cheese. I had to go buy some. I had to go to the other side of North Hollywood to get some like rubber mix so we could make this fake cheese. It's all about cheese. And but just looking at the time and going, okay, I'm working from this time to this time. This is, and it's very important to me to have an out time. In film, it's called a hard out. And that's kind of how I've realized I've lived most of my life, even with like a strolling gig. Okay, 2 hours. Yeah, 2 hours, I am doing card tricks.
You know where it is.
And at 9:01, I am done. Just because I need that. That's just the way I'm wired. Yeah. And I used to get really down on myself about that and feel like I was lazy. But really, I'm just looking at it from an analytical, practical perspective of this is the work that needs to be done, and this is the end time for that to be done. Some guys, some performers can just go and keep going forever. And some of the guys I'm working with will just keep going. And that's just not how I'm wired.
Yeah.
I think that's okay.
Yeah. I think there's like so many things, there's a balance, right? I mean, speaking from personal experience about my own wiring, and I've noticed wiring can be changed, not completely, because there's still a fundamental essence, but and very, very slowly over years.
Yeah, sure.
But it's something to think about. You can slowly kind of rework some wiring to a degree. And it's often, in fact, it's almost always healthy to do, because unless we're perfect the way we are, and no one is, like, we could all use improvement. We could all be better versions of ourselves. It's always worth, I keep thinking about the back of my mind about trying to steer my own limits. Like slowly bend, like it's like crafting a bonsai tree, like, you know, bending the tree so it like slowly starts to actually grow in this direction rather than just being bent by the trellis.
Yeah.
And that and it's about the same kind of speed as a tree growing, and like trying to steer the way the tree grows into a different shape.
That's interesting.
And so it's a good thing to just kind of keep in the back of your mind, I've found.
I'm learning that with just like, I never was somebody who could run on the treadmill, and now I can do 20 minutes on the treadmill, no problem. Mm. And even a month or two ago, that was a struggle for me. But just realizing that you can physically change yourself.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
A lot of it is just mental.
Yeah.
And whatever you want that goal to be. And it seems so insane sometimes, and so meta and so spiritual.
Nah, like, not even. Physical and mental are literally biologically the same thing. It's body cells, right? Yeah. Nerve cells versus muscle cells versus, well, not bone cells, but you know what I mean?
Well, when you start to make that progress, you realize, oh, this isn't just like mumbo jumbo. This actually
Muscles, muscle cells tear and divide and grow as your muscle gets bigger from working out. Neurons, it's called neuroplasticity, they split and grow extra bits, like extra axons, like to get neurological. Like, it's a thing. Your brain physically, like, the cells in your brain divide and rewire them, so they don't divide, they grow extra tails. Okay, but yeah, it's you absolutely, like, and you see it in extreme situations, like people being brainwashed or whatever, right? That's just a forcible, violent, you know, version of that. But you can do it to yourself, again, at about the speed that a tree, that's a really good analogy, I just came with that earlier, but I think it works really well. But yeah, you can change your personality and your reactions to things and your instincts, and phobias are curable, and like all these things are possible. They're just very difficult and very slow.
Yeah.
And that's why they seem impossible, because you can't just hit the gym and see your muscle get bigger. It's neural things are much more subtle and much more nuanced, but it's still absolutely, absolutely changeable over time.
Yeah, it's just willing to do the work, and that's the hard part.
Well, it's like that thing about learning how to be creative by creating things. And most of the time, you'll be bad at it. I mean, God, if I look back at the early years when I was in magic, I was coming up with shit. Just dumb, stupid things. Because I didn't have the experience. I didn't know enough. I hadn't tried enough stuff. you get better by doing it. And the people who, it's like that with everything, the people who tend to get good are the ones who are willing to put up with being terrible for long enough.
Yeah, sure.
To get through that period that you're terrible at, whatever it is you're learning to do. And that's really the big difference.
Well, and Mike Birbiglia has a great joke about this of, you know, when you're starting off as a comedian, you have to tell yourself it's going very well, even though it's not, because you'd never get up on stage again.
Mm.
And I think that goes true with anything. You just have to convince yourself, okay, maybe it's not the best, but it's okay. It's not horrible.
I mean, I think that probably, I would disagree. I mean, again, what works for people, right, is up to them and everything. For me, I personally think it's far healthier to acknowledge the truth of the situation always.
Yeah, that's true.
And go, yeah, this sucks. That's okay. Let's keep going even though it sucks. I think that's a much healthier way to look at it, to find the strength. And this is something I learned myself. Like, I wasn't always like this. I didn't always see it like this. And it was a very slow, gradual change over years and years and years of experience to go, look at what the actual situation is and then work with that. Hmm. And I go, yep, this show is terrible. All right, we're going to do this terrible show and we're going to try and make it less terrible over time. Let's go. And I think there's strength in being able to face that. And it's a hard thing to do. It does take strength. It's not something everyone can do. But I think if you can't do it, it's worth striving to be able to do it.
Yeah, anything. Just like you said, in the end, it's just a muscle. You have to work to death.
Yeah. Along with all the other muscles, literal and figurative.
Yeah.
Man, I need to hit the gym. I'm now getting my cardio thanks to virtual reality, which is great. That's still happening.
We spent a lot of time with this two episodes ago.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
I think actually it's part of the reason why I'm in a good mood these days. I'm actually getting some cardio. It's a real thing. It's like, it's again, like I said, I've known that for years that I should do that.
I just picture you what's his name? The kid in Arrested Development just playing the lightsaber.
Yeah, pretty much. It's about the long and short of it.
Oh, that's so funny. Played by Michael Cera.
It's that old saying in, I heard it was a Marines thing, but I assume that anything involving the military is not actually true, and it's some non-military person making it up. But like if it sounds or looks stupid but works, it isn't stupid.
I heard, I'm not saying this, I heard, I was in a bar, and they weren't drunk. I was in a bar in Juneau, or I think it was in Ketchikan, Alaska. I was, a Marine was talking to a Vietnam veteran. I was just listening to their conversation.
Yeah.
And this is what the Marine said to the Vietnam veteran. He says, Marines are just people that are, you know, willing to take orders and don't know any better. And the Vietnam veteran goes, yeah, that's exactly it. And it was kind of interesting to hear his perspective, because
that's
this
funny.
Is this tough dude and clearly much braver than I am, but acknowledge that they are just really good at taking orders and pushing themselves to those levels that weak people like us are not willing to do.
We're going, hang on a minute. Are we sure this is a good idea?
I don't want to sit in the water for 8 hours. Yeah. So why are we doing this?
That's hilarious.
Do we have to do 10 pull-ups? How about one?
Yeah. That was that. I mean, one of those many pithy phrases that really stuck with me and gave me probably 10, 15 years ago a lot of strength when I badly needed it was that bravery isn't the absence of fear. It's being afraid and doing the thing anyway.
Sure.
And fearlessness is obviously useful and a good trait, but the admirable trait is bravery. And the ironic thing is, if you're fearless, you can't be brave, because you need fear in order to demonstrate bravery.
Yeah.
And that was it's just a little thing, but when I first heard that, that was something I really needed at the time to get me through a lot of shit that was going on.
I've realized recently how much of my career has been driven by fear.
Yeah.
And like, just, okay, I like to perform, but it's, you know, an hour before showtime, and I am so anxious, and I feel like I never feel like I'm going to throw up, but I just, my stomach, if I put something in my mouth to eat, I would not be able to do that. I would throw up immediately, and it's just caused by fear, but needing to get over that in order to feel a sense of accomplishment.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of that, to me, part of a corollary, so sort of extended theory, extension of the theory of that, was that fear is, in that, by that sense, a gift, because it gives you the opportunity to demonstrate bravery. And bravery isn't a fundamentally admirable thing.
Hmm.
And so, without the fear, you don't have the opportunity for bravery.
Yeah.
And I think if you sort of sculpt your value system to venerate bravery, which is pretty, doesn't take a lot of sculpting. It's a pretty solid belief system I think most people can get behind. Then fear is a gift. Because without the fear, you know, fear is an opportunity for bravery. Because without it, there's no opportunity for bravery. You're just like, yep, I can do this. That's not bravery. It's cool. It's great. It's not that that's bad. But
yeah, I think just embracing fear is kind of a wonderful thing, and it's something we're so discouraged of. Oh, you're afraid of that? Okay, you don't have to do it, or let's work a way around it.
In your country, maybe.
That's the American way. Oh, you're afraid? Okay, well, you know, go color some things. That was me in sports.
You don't have to compete. Life isn't a competition. It's all right. Everyone gets a medal.
I was the product of the 90s. We all got trophies.
Man, it's rough.
Even me, at six years old, I'm brutal. Like, I didn't do anything.
What is this shit? That's why you're not a Marine. You questioned.
Exactly. Yeah. Nobody said, you didn't work hard enough. Work harder. Mm. But, oh, dear. That wraps it up.
It's been, I think the fact that we're sitting in your back garden with beers around a fire pit has made this an unusually mellow episode.
I think this might be a new location for the local ones.
It's not bad. It's a fine contrast to good old Over, back when we were both huddled over microphones in weird locations.
Well, even when you were in Australia on the last episode, there's such a disconnect, and it's so hard to... It's the reason I stopped doing Skype interviews with other magicians.
Yeah, it's just so
tricky. I would love to chat with, but it's not a real... And I can hear it even on NPR when they're talking to people over the phone and... They can't see each other. It's like you can feel that disconnect.
I'm really annoyed at myself that I didn't record a couple of interview or two in Australia with some of the other people there. I'm gonna slap myself on the wrist for that, because I think the cool thing would be, like, imagine if we did an intro together, even if it's over Skype or whatever. Hey, welcome. Now, Simon was recently in Australia and recorded an interview. Let's cut to that. You know, and then sort of we could include things like that, solo things we do with other people as little inserts in the episodes.
Yeah, just talking about things we have to get over, I have to put more gear into the show, because people clearly really enjoy it, and I feel like we kind of just half-ass it sometimes.
Wait, put more gear into it, as
just
in?
Just more energy into it, I guess, is the word
more
I'm looking
gear.
For.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey. Well, that's also why I was thinking about things like the how do you take notes, do you, and how do you take notes. Like, thinking about questions that are actually interesting... Actually, there you go. For people listening, what are questions you think would be interesting to ask other pro magicians and or magic adjacent show busy people? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of... I do not listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm useless that way. But I think a lot of them have, like, the standard few questions and things like that.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, the few I listen to, there are patterns that emerge for sure. But, we just have to make that's going to be the goal for the next coming months when things actually do slow down, presumably, of being able to take advantage of. I really liked what we were able to do when Dom was here, of just like, hey, come on over. You're literally across the street.
Yeah, it was a really, really good structure.
And there was a few people even last week I wish I would have been able to do. I just, time-wise, and we almost didn't make this one happen
it's that mental focus thing as well. When you're again, even if there's hours in a day, those remaining hours you're just mentally shattered and incapable of rational thought.
And I get frustrated too, because the podcasts I listen to, these guys are doing a million different projects, but then I realize, well, somebody else is editing it, somebody else is producing it. They just have to literally show up for an hour.
Yeah,
and in our case, it's planning and
well, in your case. Let's face it, you're the one doing most of the work here, for which I'm eternally grateful.
There isn't a lot of work for this type of...
I stumbled ass backwards into this podcast.
On the last podcast, I did it because, it was a Skype thing, so I had to do a lot of editing because there's just so much delay and just stuff that didn't really sync up. So, but it's easier when we're in person, too, because I can just kind of go through, make sure we didn't...
Are you around near the end of what is today's Wednesday? Are you around like late next week?
Theoretically, yeah.
Cool, because let's do another one. Let's get it in the can. That's when I get back from the very hot, dry location that I'll be doing a very big, very stressful, very scary bravery-inducing show.
That. Yeah, it'll be good to hear about that.
Yeah, oh, God, because one way or another, that's going to be a story. Man. Holy shit, that's going to be a story.
I mean, just based on the show I saw in that location and the audience reaction to said show, man, I hope it goes good for you.
I think, like, in the many possible branching futures in a five-dimensional reality that we could find ourselves in, let's hope it's one of the good ones.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You guys are at least, you guys are clearly preparing way more than the show very little preparation.
The preparation that has gone into this thing. This has been more preparation than anything I've ever worked on by miles. I wrote a script, Nick. 6,000 word script.
That's pretty amazing for you.
Oh, God.
I mean,
yeah.
Even for me, too. Like I said, I recently scripted out something, and it's so hard to script out something you know you want to say, and then you're like, okay, I have to kind of follow this when you're so used to, at least in my case, improvising on stage.
Well, we've also got like the actual production manager, stage manager, assistant stage manager, stage hand.
So they need to know what's going on.
Oh, yeah, they need to know what's going on. And also, we've got three people of sort of significantly non-native English language skills. I'll cut back to, and we've also got hold for helicopter.
First helicopter. Not bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Hang on. I mean, I can still hear it. Is it coming through the... I can't tell if it's sound or recorded
These
sound.
These headphones are so terrible.
Who knows? And in addition to those, the stage manager and everybody, we've got three people of varyingly very non-native English language skills who are reading my script. And so we've got a coordinator kind of checking everyone's on top of it, knows what their lines are, knows what their cues are, knows what when they're coming out. There's many moving parts to this.
It'll be good. It'll be fun.
Hey, and if it's not, it's a good story. That's the way. You gotta be willing to face oblivion.
Fingers crossed.
To innovate and try things.
Thanks for listening. If you want to give us money, we have a Patreon. We keep getting more and more people giving us $1 a month, so we really appreciate it.
Thanks.
We're going to be able to buy that boat one day. And
let us know what you, I don't know, let us know anything. We really appreciate the people who have emailed and texted either of us. It's really appreciated. Yeah. It's good to know. We had we talked about that last time. Yeah, people for whom this has been worthwhile, let us know why. If you are listening to it and or giving us money, let us know why so that we can continue to serve you.
I know we're getting more successful because we're getting slightly bullied online by certain people.
Right, really? What's happening?
Well,
this
like,
is news to me.
Someone we were talking about, just certain comments of like, I think they're fans, but they're also like commenting in a way where they don't think we'll ever see it. And that kind of makes me happy because I've never really gotten to this point before.
What? I don't even know what this is.
I'll tell you off.
All right. We'll take this off mic. Because I don't want to
make anybody feel bad.
Take this off cast. That's hilarious. Oh, God.
Anywho.
I'm trepidatious.
Right. Have a good week. Good luck with your shows.
Back at you.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.